Welcome to the Great Detectives of Old Time Radio from Boise, Idaho. This is your host, Adam Graham. If you have a comment, please send it to me, box13 at greatdetectives.net. Follow us on Twitter at Radio Detectives and become one of our friends on Facebook, facebook.com/radiodetectives. Well, before we get started, today's program is brought to you by the financial support of our listeners. Thank you so much for your support. And I particularly want to thank Richard and John for supporting our listener support campaign. We'll send access to our premium site, as we do with all donations of $7 or more, plus we'll send an extra of their choice. Among the options we do have available, at the $20 level, we will send you your choice of several great Colonial Radio Theater radio dramas. Among them, we have a set of Perry Mason and Father Brown mysteries, or King Solomon's Mine, or their excellent adaptation of Gettysburg, or Zorro. Quite a few choices. You can view them all at support.greatdetectives.net. In addition, you'll receive, at your request, your choice of 4 ebooks. Either All I Needed to Know I Learned from Columbo, which examines life lessons from great fictional detectives, or one of my superhero comedy stories, Tales of the Dim Night, Fly Another Day, or Powerhouse Hard Pressed. Well, now it's time for us to finish the Cranesburg Matter. So here's the Cranesburg Matter, parts 4 and 5.
From Hollywood, it's time now for...
Johnny Dollar.
This is Dean Sellers, Mr. Dollar. You may recall meeting me this afternoon at...
Yes, you're Miss Crane's fiancé. What's on your mind, Mr. Sellers?
I'm downstairs in the hotel lobby. I'd like to come up and talk to you, if I could.
Well, I was just on the point of leaving for the police station.
Oh, then you know about Betty.
Yes. As a matter of fact, Chief Durham arrested her here in my room.
What?
I said she was arrested.
I know, but what was she doing there?
I had the gun that was used to murder Smiley Prell. She wanted it back.
What do you mean, wanted it back?
Why all the interest in this girl, Mr. Sellers?
Well, I...
Is it just because you happen to be engaged to the woman she works for?
Well, yes, you might say that. No, that's not it at all. I've got to talk to you.
All right. I'll meet you in the hotel bar in 5 minutes.
Tonight, and every weekday night, Bob Bailey in the transcribed adventures of the man with the action-packed expense account, America's fabulous freelance insurance investigator...
Yours truly, Johnny Dollar. From Special Investigator Johnny Dollar, location Cranesburg, Ohio, to the Home Office Tri-State Guarantee Company, Hartford, Connecticut. Assignment, the Cranesburg Matter. Expense account continued. Item 10, $2.75 for 3 brandies straight. 1 for me and 2 for Dean Sellers. Newcomer to Cranesburg, man about town, and fiancé of local socialite Melba Crane. The man who'd given her the pearl necklace that had been stolen from the safe in her home. It had supposedly been an engagement gift, yet now Sellers was flipping his lid because Melba's maid was in a jam. I remembered the scene in the Crane sunroom earlier in the afternoon, and Dean Sellers remembered it too.
When you walked up on the porch at the Crane estate and saw Betty and me in each other's arms, you,
I thought the obvious, naturally.
Yeah, I figured as much. That's why I tried to cover up when I talked to you afterward.
You didn't have to, Mr. Sellers. I kind of wrote it off as just another bachelor having a fling before he settled down.
Yeah, that's the way I looked at it, at first.
Mm-hmm. So?
So, it didn't work out that way.
How did it work out?
I finally realized I was in love with Betty.
I see.
I know it may sound corny, but it happens to be true.
Does Melba Crane know about it?
No. Well, at least I don't think she does.
Well, what did she think when you broke off your engagement?
Oh, I haven't actually broken it off. I just postponed it. I told her I was loaded with work and we'd have to wait a while.
And she accepted that?
Well, she seemed to. Can't be sure about Melba, though. She's a cool one. Plays her cards close.
Yeah, well, most women are pretty cool when they suspect somebody is poaching on their own private preserve.
She may have suspected, but I don't think she could have known anything for sure. Betty and I haven't always been as careless as we were this afternoon.
Well, what about the pearls? Were you intending to ask Melba to give them back?
I didn't really know what to do, Mr. Dollar. $20,000 is a lot of money. On the other hand, I gave them to her as an engagement gift. It seemed kind of rough to ask for them back after breaking the engagement on her.
Do you think she'd have returned them if you had asked her?
Well, I suppose so. Of course, it didn't go that far. Before I could make up my mind what to do, the necklace was stolen.
And this afternoon, the man who claimed he stole it was murdered.
Betty had nothing to do with that.
You could be prejudiced, Mr. Sellers.
I know her, I tell you.
How well?
Well enough that I'm planning to marry her.
That's what I mean.
All right. But that doesn't mean I'm completely blind about her. Somebody's trying to frame that girl.
Who, for instance?
I don't know.
And for what reason?
I don't know that either. But I do know one thing. When she says she knows nothing about it, she's telling the truth.
I admire loyalty myself, Mr. Sellers, but there are a lot of facts against her.
What facts?
As you probably know, when I caught her with that gun out at the Crane place and took it away from her, she was trying to hide it in the incinerator.
All right. What's that prove? She'd found it hidden in her room and she was trying to get rid of it.
Well, a lot of people, if they were innocent, might have gone to the police with it.
She got scared, that's all. She lost her head.
Maybe. But that's not all that's against her. There are other things, a kind of pattern.
What things?
That safe at the Crane house was opened during the 1 hour of the day that everybody was out somewhere.
Including Betty, if you remember.
So she claims. And she probably was. I'm not saying she actually committed the theft.
She couldn't have. No one except Melba and her uncle Phineas knows the combination to that safe.
No, no. I think Smiley Prell actually did the job. An old-fashioned safe like that would be a cinch for a pro of his talents.
Then how do you figure Betty is being involved?
Smiley had to know when to do it. And he had to get into the house. There were no locks forced, so he must have had a key.
So, of course, the maid must have helped him.
Not necessarily, but it sure does add up.
And then Smiley Prell was murdered, shot. Are you claiming she did that, too?
She was in possession of the gun that killed him. She was caught trying to get rid of it.
But why? Why would she kill him if they were in on it together?
Well, as you mentioned a couple of minutes ago, $20,000 is a lot of money. Maybe she wanted a whole necklace, not a half of one.
You don't know her, that's all.
No, you're right. But I do know what the facts seem to point to.
Circumstantial evidence, nothing else.
True.
And not only that, but it leaves you hanging right up in the air.
What do you mean?
That pearl necklace. Now, there's a fact for you to swallow. As I understand it, the police haven't found it.
That's right.
It wasn't on Prell's body. And they didn't find it on Betty. If she killed him to get it, where is it?
I don't know.
Well, if she's arraigned for this, the prosecuting attorney had better know. Because without it, he won't even have a case.
I'm quite aware of that, Mr. Sellers. I left him standing there, belligerent and despondent, and drove across town to the police station. It was late by then, and Cranesburg had pretty well folded up for the night. Well, that was fine with me. The fewer people I saw at the moment, the better. I felt about as low as Sellers did, because I was starting to get a hunch that this one might turn out messy, that no matter how it might end, some average, decent people were bound to get hurt. It's like that sometimes when there's been a murder. Chief of Police Durham looked like he was expecting me.
Sit down, Mr. Dollar.
Thanks, Chief. Planning to spend the night here?
Nope, I'm about to give up. Going home in a few minutes. I've been trying to get a statement from that girl.
Any luck?
It depends on how you mean it. She's willing to talk, all right. Answers anything we ask her.
But not the way you want her to answer, is that it?
She won't budge an inch away from that same story. Says she found the gun hidden in her room, was scared because of the robbery last week, and tried to get rid of it.
What about Smiley Prell?
Claims the first she heard of him was that bulletin on the radio telling about his murder. That's when she got panicky and came to the hotel to get the gun back.
And that's all she knows about it, huh?
So she claims. We couldn't budge her on it.
Uh-huh. You still haven't found any trace of the necklace, huh?
Nope. And without it, I doubt if the DA will even issue a complaint.
Yeah. The same possibility was raised by someone else a few minutes ago.
Who was that?
Dean Sellers, the fellow who gave the pearls to Miss Crane in the first place.
How come he's getting into it?
Well, it appears that love has reared its head. He's frothing at the mouth over this girl's arrest, claims she's being framed.
He could be right, Mr. Dollar.
I know.
Beats me. Man just don't know where to start with a mess like this one on his hands.
I think I'm beginning to get some idea of where to start.
How do you mean?
Look, I've got a photograph here from the insurance files. Take a look. It's a photo of that necklace.
I see.
I was wondering, Chief Durham, do you know of any jeweler here in Cranesburg who could make a duplicate of that? A skillful imitation?
No. No, I'm afraid you'll have to go into Cincinnati for that. Be the closest place, at least.
No, I don't want a duplicate made. I want to know whether somebody did go into Cincinnati for that purpose some 4 or 5 months ago.
Well, might take a while to find out.
How much of a while?
Oh, not too long, with a little luck. I could get Jim Markley in here.
Markley?
He's a local jeweler. He could take this photograph and give them a technical description over the phone. Done things like that for us before.
Good.
Yeah, might have something back for you by tomorrow afternoon.
The sooner the better.
Yeah, I'll call Jim and ask him to come down.
One other thing, Chief.
Yeah?
I've already phoned Hartford and started them to work on this, but we may get faster results if you move in on it from this end.
All right. What is it you want?
I want a tracer put on Dean Sellers.
I see.
A complete rundown. He's been here for 8 months. What did he do before that? Where did he come from? Where did he get the necklace? Who are his friends? What's his financial status? Anything you can get.
I don't quite see what you're aiming at, Mr. Dollar.
I'm not quite sure I do. It was after midnight, and there was nothing more I could do until the next day except drive back to my hotel and sack in for the night. It was a good, sensible, conservative intention, and I managed to carry it to the point of taking off my tie and unbuttoning my shirt. The night manager had been pretty upset earlier when Betty Jackson came to my room and then left under arrest. I don't know what he thought when I had my second female visitor. Well, good evening, Miss Crane.
Could I have a word with you, Mr. Dollar?
Sure, why not? Come on in.
Thank you. I guess it's a little indiscreet of me to come here like this.
Oh, why so?
Well, after all, this is Cranesburg, and when one has to maintain a sort of position in town, well, I'm sure you understand.
Oh, perfectly. How about a drink?
What?
Drink. D-R-I-N-K. I even happen to have 2 clean glasses.
I'm afraid you have the wrong impression, Mr. Dollar.
Why so? It's good cognac. The best, in fact. Won't do a bit of harm to your position.
Make it a double, if you will.
Check. May I ask you what has happened to cause you to throw discretion to the winds in this mad fashion, Miss Crane?
I felt it was something I ought to make clear to you concerning Dean, my fiancé.
I see. Here you go.
Thank you. I believe you talked to him this evening, didn't you?
Briefly, yes.
Then you know, of course, that he's taking up for this girl, trying to defend what she did.
He did seem to have something like that in mind.
I also think you may have observed a little tableau in the sunroom when you came to the house this afternoon.
Oh, now look, Miss Crane.
Please. I'm quite aware of the situation. I've observed a few of those scenes myself. I'm not a complete fool, you know.
Why are you telling me all this?
The reason should be obvious.
I'm dense. I can only understand what I actually hear.
What I mean is, it should be rather apparent that any alibi Dean might supply in a noble attempt to save this poor innocent girl should not be given too much credence.
Because he might be prejudiced in her favor?
Is there any doubt of it?
Your glass is empty. Like another one?
Oh, I don't believe I should. Thanks.
Aren't you a little prejudiced, Miss Crane, against the girl?
Very likely, under the circumstances. Am I to take it, then, that you're on her side, too?
I am on the side of the Tri-State Guarantee Company. And if you remember, they're out $20,000 on a necklace that was stolen. I'm here to get it back, that's all.
I think I'd better go. I shouldn't have come here at all.
Whatever you think.
Oh, by the way, has Uncle Phineas talked to you yet?
We passed the time of day.
That's all?
Well, we didn't have much time. The circumstances were a little unusual.
Then you've probably been spared some of his wilder imaginings.
I wouldn't count on that.
What do you mean?
Sit down, Miss Crane. Finish your drink. We haven't even started to talk. Johnny Dollar.
Good afternoon, sir. This is Phineas Crane.
How are you, Mr. Crane?
Highly perturbed, sir.
Now, what's bothering you?
My generation used to call it conscience. I want to talk to you, Mr. Dollar.
Well, that's quite a change, isn't it, from your attitude last night?
There have been a number of changes since last night. I can't bear the thought of that girl being imprisoned.
She doesn't like it too much herself. All right, what's on your mind?
Well, I'd prefer not to discuss it over the telephone.
Then you'll have to hold your horses. I'm waiting here for a call from Hartford and some information from the police.
It might be the same information I'm ready to give you, sir.
I don't think so. You should have talked last night, Mr. Crane. I might have been willing then to make a deal of some kind.
And now?
No deal. I can guess what happened to the necklace. And as far as the rest of it's concerned, I never make deals on murder. From Special Investigator Johnny Dollar, location Cranesburg, Ohio, to the Home Office, Tri-State Guarantee Company, Hartford, Connecticut. Assignment, the Cranesburg matter. Expense account, final page. Item 13, $28.65. Phone calls to Cincinnati and Cleveland, and two prepaid calls to Hartford. The wheels were spinning now, and I spent most of the day just sitting back and waiting. Toward late afternoon, Police Chief Ed Durham phoned, then Hartford, and then Durham again. And finally, the three black bars dropped into place, and the payoff was jackpot. Item 14, $10.50, second day's rental on hired car. I left the hotel just before dark and drove out through the north edge of town to the Crane Estate. When I'd gone out there the day before, I'd been mostly guessing, playing hunches. But this time, I knew pretty much what I wanted and just how to go about getting it. I thought the place deserted as I walked up the long arbor from the carriage house. But as I stepped out onto the terrace, I realized I was wrong.
Mr. Dollar, over here. In here, please. Hurry.
Why all the secrecy, Mr. Crane?
I wanted to talk to you alone. I rather doubted whether I would be able to, if it were known that you were here.
Able to or permitted to?
Well, that's what I meant, sir. Permitted.
Who would stop you, Mr. Crane?
Well, that, you might say, is part of the story. The story I didn't tell you last night.
Why not? Why didn't you tell me?
I still thought then I might be able to save things.
And you don't think so now?
I'm afraid not. It's too late. You know too much about it now.
What were you doing in Smiley Prowl's room when I found you last night?
Looking for the necklace. I told you that.
Did you know then he'd been murdered?
Oh, no, no, no. I wouldn't have had the nerve to go there if I had. And there wouldn't be of any use of going. That's when I realized it was all over, when I heard Mr. Prell had been killed. Dishonesty is one thing, but murder is something else again.
You're so right.
Of course, it wasn't dishonest at first. It was all quite legal in the beginning.
But not later.
No, no, not later. I was against that. Not that I'm claiming any virtue for it. Probably it was just cowardice. Mr. Dollar, be as easy on her as you can.
I'm afraid it won't be in my hands.
I suppose not. These things are always done so impersonally by institutions created for that purpose. Rightfully, no doubt. But one occasionally wonders.
There's something I wonder about sometimes, Mr. Crane.
You refer to?
Human greed.
That's true. There's no real excuse for us, my niece and me. Reasons, yes. An inherited social position and way of life, and declining wealth to support them. We're soft people, Mr. Dollar, and when life gets hard, we look for a soft way out.
And that usually turns out to be the hard way.
She'll find it so, I imagine. For me, it doesn't really matter anymore.
How did you get into Smiley Prell? How did you know he was the one who robbed your safe?
I was just guessing. until you told me yesterday that he was a professional jewel thief and that he'd phoned the insurance company and claimed to have the necklace.
But before that, when you were guessing, how did you know about him? What reason did you have to guess?
I'd seen him hanging around the estate here twice, the week before the robbery and when I saw him again afterward, talking to his contact, I guess you'd call it.
His employer fits the facts better.
I suppose so. Anyway, I put two and two together, and I followed Prero. I found out where he lived.
Did the employer know you'd done this?
No, hardly. Or I doubt that I'd be sitting here talking to you. Oh, not that it matters, since you probably know more of the details than I do.
All right, Uncle Phineas. That's quite enough.
Melba.
That was a very quiet entrance, Miss Crane.
It wasn't intentional. I didn't know you were here until I heard voices. Uncle Phineas, would you mind leaving us alone?
It's too late, my dear. I think time is about to run out on all of us.
Aided a great deal, I presume, by some of your more senile imaginings.
Mr. Dollar didn't really need any help.
Please.
Very well, my dear. I leave the two of you then to what I anticipate may be rather stormy.
What were you doing? Pumping him? Trying to make him say things you could twist later and use against him?
No, it was more a matter of humoring him, I'd say. What's the matter, Melba? Hangover from last night?
I suppose you told him that, too, that I came to your hotel to see you.
No, didn't seem relevant somehow.
I see.
Where's your fiancé?
Dean?
Sure, how many have you got?
Mr. Sellers is in the billiard room. Why? What do you want with him?
Oh, I need just a few more facts to fill out the picture. I think he can supply them, that's all.
What facts? Why have you come here?
Uncle Phineas invited me.
What for?
He said something about wanting to clear his conscience.
His mind wanders. You know that. You can't rely on anything he says.
I'm not.
What about the girl they arrested?
Your maid, Betty?
Yes, Betty. If the police are satisfied she's guilty, why aren't you?
Because I was hired to find a pearl necklace that was stolen from your safe. It was insured for $20,000, remember? And I haven't found it yet.
Suppose I were to withdraw the insurance claim.
It's a little too late. The police would want to know why.
Why? Simply because I choose to. Because I don't want any more fuss about it. It's not a loss, actually. The necklace was a gift.
Oh, yes, I know. An engagement present of great sentimental value from that wealthy young philanderer, Mr. Dean Sellers, who incidentally is broker than you are.
What?
Yep. Got a complete rundown on him from Hartford late this afternoon.
I don't believe it.
It's quite a shock, I imagine.
You'd say anything just to help that girl get out of jail.
Ah, you got me mixed up with Sellers, haven't you? He's the one who rallied to her defense.
A cheap little flirt. I hope they convict her.
Do you really believe she's the reason Sellers broke off your engagement?
It wasn't broken off. It was only postponed.
Well, it's like I said, Melba. A lot of surprises. By the way, I'd like to search Betty's room, if you don't mind. That's actually why I came out here.
What for?
That necklace. I was hired to recover it, remember?
But if you think she's innocent, then why do you bother...
How do you know what I think? I haven't really said, have I?
No. That's true. That's quite true.
Lucky shot, Mr. Dollar. You got two on the break.
Yeah. Result of a misspent youth. All right. Four ball in the corner pocket.
Expert, huh?
Oh, just lucky, like you said. Oh, by the way, Mr. Sellers, you were right about Betty. She isn't guilty. She was being framed.
I told you so.
Yeah, she was just an innocent bystander, you might say. Even though I did find the necklace a few minutes ago, hidden in her room.
Found it? Good.
The Cranes, though, aren't quite so innocent.
The Cranes?
No. Nine ball, the far side pocket.
What do you mean about the Cranes?
They were broke, and they needed money to keep up a front. When you came to town and showed an interest in Melba, they figured you were the answer.
Why, you're making Melba sound pretty cold-blooded, you know.
Oh, there was no love lost. You were playing the same game.
Huh?
Sure, Sellers. That's the way you've always operated. Your last wife was a wealthy widow in Miami, Florida. You stayed with her for a year and a half and took her for $150,000. And all that was left of it when you came here was the $20,000 you had invested in the pearl necklace. That was your stake, and that's the way you used it, to convince Melba Crane you weren't a fortune hunter. 12 ball in the far corner.
Dollar, where did you get all this information?
Police records. Then about a month ago, you broke off your engagement with Melba Crane. Why?
Because I was in love with Betty.
You were playing Betty for a pigeon. You backed out because you'd finally discovered that the Cranes were flat broke.
I wasn't after Melba's money.
Sure you were. But you wanted to get out without losing your investment, that necklace. So you brought in Smiley Prell to steal it for you.
I never saw Prell in my life.
Uncle Phineas saw the two of you together a couple of days after the robbery.
Well, he's lying.
So Prell pulled the robbery. And then he told you the pearls he'd stolen were phony. You accused him of double-crossing you. He thought you were double-crossing him. Net result, he got sore and tried for a deal with the insurance company. That's why you killed him.
Are you accusing me of murder?
That's right, Sellers. Eight ball in the end pocket. Who else, Sellers? Betty wasn't in it, except that you tried to frame her. And both the Cranes knew the pearls were imitation. You were the only one who didn't.
They weren't imitations. I paid $20,000 for that necklace.
Not for this one. Melba sold the necklace a month after you gave it to her. They've been living on the money. She had this copy made in Cincinnati.
Why, that cheap little crook.
So the pearls you killed Smiley for and then planted upstairs in Betty's room are worth about $200 at the most. Something to think about, isn't it?
That's right, Dollar. And so is this.
Uh-oh. That's a losing game, too, Sellers.
It will be for you if you try to make a move.
Shoot it out with the police? Is that your answer?
If it comes to that. At least I know how to use a gun. Smiley Prell could tell you.
Did you steal this one from Uncle Phineas, too?
No, this one's my own. Now put down that pool cue and get your hands up. Slow and easy. When I go out of here...
Dean, what are you doing with that?
Thanks, Melba.
What have you done, Mr. Dollar?
Nothing. It's going to make him feel very happy for the next day or so. A pool cue makes a pretty handy weapon.
Why? What was he doing with that gun?
Surprise number one. Your fiancé is the lad who had your necklace stolen and then later killed his partner.
Dean?
Oh, that's probably the chief of police. He was coming out to meet me. You want to let him in?
Murderer. And I was going to marry him.
Yeah, I guess murder is a lot worse than fraud.
What do you mean?
You filed an insurance claim on a necklace you'd already sold. I imagine the company will want to prosecute.
I didn't know what I was doing.
You sure didn't, anywhere along the line. You were marrying Dean Sellers for the money he didn't have. And at the same time, he was trying to marry you for the money you didn't have. Too bad it didn't work out. You two were made for each other. The police are getting impatient, Miss Crane. Expense account item 15, $186.25. Incidentals in Cranesburg and transportation back to Hartford. Expense account total, $409.10. End of account, end of report. Under separate cover, I am forwarding one necklace consisting of 38 pearls, all imitation, approximate value $200, along with my sincere condolences. Yours truly, Johnny Dollar.
Now here's our star to tell you about next week's story.
Next week, the curse of an ancient king and how it affected the lives and deaths of two people. Join us, won't you? Yours truly, Johnny Dollar.
Yours truly, Johnny Dollar, starring Bob Bailey, is transcribed in Hollywood. Written by Les Crutchfield, it is produced and directed by Jack Johnstone. Heard in this week's cast were Howard McNair, Forrest Lewis, Paul Richards, Mary Jane Croft, Virginia Gregg, James McCallion, Shirley Mitchell, and Russ Thorson. Musical supervision by Amerigo Marino. Be sure to join us on Monday night, same time and station, for another exciting story of yours truly, Johnny Dollar. Roy Rowan speaking.
Welcome back. Well, this has got to be one of my favorite of these five-part serials. Just really well done, and I love the conclusion. Just really sharp and dramatic, and just a satisfying payoff with Johnny confronting the killer over a game of pool. This episode was another one that Les Crutchfield had adapted from an earlier one-shot script. In this case, it was the Beauregard Matter. Though I have to say, I don't remember the Beauregard Matter being quite this good. This really was one of the best ones, and I really like the way this went. And I got surprised a little by the ending, just because that suspect was kind of on the periphery. So overall, pretty nicely done. All right, well, now on to some listener comments and feedback. And first we begin, actually we'll start with a question from Chris. Regarding episode 1185, love this. They did their homework. I knew it as soon as the wife said she kept the house closed up during the day to keep it cool. I wish contemporary shows would take the time to get those kind of details right. Well, thanks for the comment. I will say that contemporary shows don't have the monopoly on getting things wrong. I have an email from a listener, which I'll read next week, taking an issue with Manhunt's portrayal of violins. But we'll read it during an actual Manhunt segment. But there are details that programs get wrong, even good ones. One of the biggest ones I've heard is the great detective show Monk. One of the big mistakes there that is kind of glaring to a lot of people is Adrian Monk's rank when he was a police officer is consistently described as being Detective Monk. But if he were on the San Francisco PD, he would be Inspector Monk. It's a really odd mistake that they made, but they made it consistently. While the lineup, when it moved to television, it gave itself a setting in San Francisco. And when it did that, it incorporated the inspector ranks so that its rankings would be accurate and would match reality. Unfortunately, sometimes writers are guilty of not wanting to take the time to research. I've probably been guilty of that a time or two, but I try to avoid it because it annoys readers. Thanks so much for the comment. Jerry comments, so glad to get you on my iPhone. I've been looking for something like this. Well, I'm glad you found us, and I'm glad you're enjoying the show. Finally, Rick emails in with a question. Hi, I just found your webpage and TuneIn channel. He said he made a donation. What is the premium level you mention on the site? That's a good question, and I don't think I've talked about this in quite a while. With the app, we usually produce about 3 specials a month. And unless we have something special going on, for example, when we were playing episodes of Poirot, we did something a little different. But unless we have something special going on, each month we'll have 3 app extras that will go out to people who have the Android app or the Apple app. And these generally will feature our detective, the actors who play detectives, playing some other role. We've been focusing on Gail Gordon just because he had so many really interesting roles. Most months we vary it among 3 different actors. If you've got the iPhone or the Android phone, you can just, you know, view those on your app. But a lot of people don't have smartphones. So the premium site, we give access to those programs before and after commentary. So it really explores a wide variety of different radio shows, and you get to hear a lot of things. We do some science fiction, family dramas quite a bit, historical stories like Cavalcade of America, A lot of this, I'll be honest, is kind of based on my own likes, what I think will be interesting and we'll share, but it just gives you a different look at a lot of the actors and perhaps some old-time radio that you might not hunt for or find, but it's still really well done and worth a listen. And that's the premium side. We also have some of the older app extras we did with Dragnet with a variety of different police procedural shows, from the more obscure ones like Nick Harris to This Is Your FBI. So some good stuff there. And that does remind me that during the listener support campaign, we'll not only send you access to our premium site, we'll send you a free ebook of your choice from the four listed there, and we'll send you an additional thank you gift. That's with a donation of $20 or more. Among the options we have are some pretty interesting books. They've gone ahead and created collections of all the Poirot stories and all the Marple stories. So you can have one volume that contains every single Poirot or Marple story. Two separate volumes. We'll send you your choice of either volume if you live in the U.S. and Canada, for a donation of $75 or more. And we have a lot of other items. You can take a look at them all at support.greatdetectives.net. All right, well, that will do it for today. We will resume with yours truly, Johnny Dollar, on Monday. And Manhunt returns next Friday. And we'll be back for the lineup tomorrow. In the meantime, if you have a comment, send it to me, box13 at greatdetectives.net. Follow us on Twitter at Radio Detectives and become one of our friends on Facebook, facebook.com/Radio Detectives. From Boise, Idaho, this is your host, Adam Graham, signing off.